Irish writer Frank O'Connell, I'm sorry, O'Connor, tells how as a boy, some friends and he would hike the countryside. When they came to an orchard wall that seemed too high to climb, they would throw their hats over the wall. Then they had no choice but to climb over, you see. Today we celebrate two women who also acted in faith and hope. Susan B. Anthony and her friend, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. An historical plaque in the lobby of the First Unitarian Church in Rochester, New York reads, "In reverent gratitude to the sisters Susan B. Anthony and Mary S. Anthony, for many years members of this religious society, devoted pioneers to the women's suffrage movement, in remembrance of the brave little band of women, several of them connected to our society, who, on August 2nd, 1848, ratified the proceedings of the first women's suffrage convention, called a fortnight earlier in the village of Seneca Falls and adjourned to the city of Rochester." Susan B. Anthony did not attend the convention, although her parents and sisters did when it reconvened in the Rochester Unitarian Church. She was teaching school elsewhere. She was, however, a bit bemused at her family's participation and even teased them about it. Susan B. Anthony was raised Quaker. When the family moved to Rochester in 1845, they joined the Hissite Quakers. Finding the local meeting not in sympathy with the anti-slavery movement, the family and a number of other Quakers gradually began to identify with the Unitarian Church. Susan B. Anthony signed the membership book on January 1st, 1893, though she had attended the Unitarian Church for over 40 years. In her famous interview with Nellie Bly, she was asked, "Do you pray?" "Anthony, I pray every single second of my life, not on my knees, but with my work. My prayer is to lift women to equality with men. Work and worship are one with me. I cannot imagine a God of the universe made happy by my getting down on my knees and calling him great." Anthony continues, "The religious persecution of the ages had been carried on under what was claimed to be the command of God. I distrust those people who know so well what God wants them to do, because I notice it always coincides with their own desires." Anthony's longtime dearest friend, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, was born in 1815 in Johnston, New York. By contrast, Stanton had a Scotch Presbyterian upbringing in which the devil was very real. Stanton, "Everything we like to do is a sin. I'm so tired of that everlasting no, no, no." Her father, Judge Cady, distraught when his only son died, once said to her in words she never forgot, "Oh, my daughter, I wish you were a boy." Let that sink in. Though she was a brilliant student, she never won his unqualified approval. He was so angry that she would lecture to mixed audiences that he cut her out of his will. He eventually restored her inheritance. Stanton, "The memory of my own suffering has prevented me from ever shadowing one young soul with the superstitions of the Christian religion. My religious superstitions gave place to rational ideas based on scientific facts, and as a result, I grew more and more happy. When she married Henry Stanton, a lawyer and staunch abolitionist, her family was appalled, even shocked, when they removed the word obey from their wedding ceremony. My ex-wife and I did the same thing, actually. On their honeymoon, are you ready? On their honeymoon, they attended the World Anti-Slavery Convention in London. On their honeymoon. There she met Lucretia Mott, a Quaker and social reformer. Mott and other American women had been banished from the convention. Why? Largely on biblical grounds that women were to be subservient to their husbands. Stanton. We resolved to hold a convention as soon as we returned home and form a society to advocate the rights of women. On July 13th, 1848, over tea at the home of Jane Hunt in Waterloo, New York, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucretia Mott, her sister Martha Wright, and Mary Ann McClintock called a meeting for protest and discussion for July 19th and 20th at the Wesleyan Chapel in Seneca Falls. They had no idea how such a meeting would turn out. It became the gavel heard around the world. The year 1848 was a year of revolution all over Europe. It was the year of the Communist Manifesto. In the United States, it was the age of reform. Anti-slavery, temperance, and utopian movements flourished. However, a very bloody civil war was only 13 years down the road. One woman participant recorded her journey to the convention. At first, we traveled quite alone, but before we had gone many miles, we came on other wagon loads of women bound in the same direction. As we reached the different crossroads, we saw wagons coming from every part of the country. And long before we reached Seneca Falls, we were in a procession. There were 300 in attendance, which included 40 men. One man was Frederick Douglass, a recently freed slave from Maryland who had moved to Rochester to publish his Northern Star newspaper. Elizabeth Cady Stanton had not attended male participation, but they seemed so interested they were admitted. Lucretia Mott spoke first, Elizabeth Cady Stanton spoke next. She included in her remarks familiar words that had an important amendment. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men and women are created equal. The next day, every resolution was unanimously passed except the call for women's suffrage. Elizabeth Cady Stanton's husband, Henry, opposed it. He said he would leave town if they kept it. They did, and he did. Elizabeth Cady Stanton made an impassioned speech supported by Frederick Douglass. After acrimonious debate, it narrowly passed. Only one of the original signers was alive in 1920 when the 19th Amendment finally passed. Only one. The convention then adjourned to Rochester. There, the suffrage resolution passed by a wide margin. The revolution had begun. However, The event had struck a raw nerve in the nation. One newspaper called the convention a mass of corruption, heresies, ridiculous nonsense, and reeking vulgarities which these bad women have vomited forth for the past 3 days. It was in the context of the fallout from the convention that Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton became friends. They were introduced on the streets of Seneca Falls by Amelia Bloomer. They shared their feelings about the struggle in conversation and correspondence over the next 50 plus years. Elizabeth Cady Stanton wrote in one letter to Susan B. Anthony, "I passed through a terrible scourging when last at my father's. I can't tell you how deep the iron entered my soul. I never felt more keenly the degradation of my sex. To think that all in me, of which my father would have felt a proper pride had I been a man, is deeply mortifying to him because I am a woman. But I will both write and speak. Sometimes, Susan, I struggle in deep waters." They did not always see eye to eye. Elizabeth Cady Stanton was a lively, creative mind. She tended to move from issue to issue, while Susan B. Anthony steadfastly focused on women's suffrage. Then too, Anthony at times resented the domestic responsibilities Cady Stanton and others had, which kept them from the fray. "Anthony, those of you who have the talent to do honor to poor womanhood have all given yourselves to baby making and left poor brainless me to do battle alone." Anthony continues in another correspondence, "I would not object to marriage if it were not that the woman threw away every plan and purpose of their own life to conform to the plans and purposes of the man's life." When she learned that Lucy Stone was pregnant, she wrote to her, "Lucy, neither of us have time for such personal matters." They were a remarkable team. Susan B. Anthony, a Quaker become Unitarian, whose faith was in changing the world. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, a Scotch Presbyterian become free thinker. I would encourage you to look that up, free thinkers. They actually emerged out of us and in the Midwest. A Scotch Presbyterian become free thinker whose impassioned mind and eloquent voice moved millions. In 1902, 4 years before her death, Anthony wrote to Cady Stanton, "We little dreamed that half a century later we would be compelled to leave the finish of the battle to another generation of women. But there is an army of them where we were just a handful. Stanton, if I had the slightest premonition of all that was to follow that first convention, I fear I should not have had courage to risk it. Our successors have big work before them, much bigger, in fact, than they can imagine. We are only the stone that started the ripple, but they are the ripple that is spreading and will eventually cover the whole pond." Like Frank O'Connor and his friends, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton took off their hats and threw them over the high walls. They knew they would have to climb over to get their hats. And I propose today, so must we. Today, women are paid 82% of what men are paid. The pay gap has barely budged in a decade. A report from the Institute of Women's Policy Research estimates that a woman in Wyoming has a 144-year wait for equal pay. In California, the calculation is a 27-year wait. The Paycheck Fairness Act would improve the scope of the Equal Pay Act, which has not been updated since 1963. The most needed updates are stronger incentives for employers to follow the law, to enhance federal enforcement efforts, and to prohibit retaliation against workers asking about wage practices. Tell Congress to get going. This can't wait. Yet equal pay is but one issue women face today. Others include violence against women, reproductive rights, sex trafficking. This, of course, is only a short, incomplete list, but a telling one nonetheless. The hour is now. It is our turn to take off our hats and throw them over the high walls. Too much is at stake, too much is in bud to sit by and do nothing. Happy Women's History Month, everyone. Never doubt, never, ever, ever, ever doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has.